Welcome, I'm Lana, and joining me from Down Under is Sydney Watson, an Australian-American political commentator, writer, and journalist. We're going to talk about the current conditions in Australia, as liberalism is a sick disease that is infecting most Western countries, even way down there. So stick around. Sydney Watson, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this should be fun, though, because it's nighttime my time, morning your time. So, you know, you're on almost like different wavelengths, really, nighttime, morning time. So are you a morning person?
Me, a morning person? No, not so much. I feel it's really hard to get up in the morning, especially because it's winter time right now. I just want to stay in bed. So it's not really.
Now, winter time in Australia, a lot of people, they just think that it's warm there all the time, right? But it actually gets cold and it snows, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, definitely snows in the mountains and things. Not so much, though. I mean, we have a pretty, I guess, humid climate where I live, which means that when it's cold, it's like the bone-chilling cold. But there are parts of the country that don't get super cold. But yeah, we definitely have winter. People just seem to think that it's sunny all the time, and it's not.
Yeah, I lived in Brisbane, I think, for about a year, and I really enjoyed it. I was actually quite shocked at the cost of real estate and rent and just overall cost of living. Why is it so expensive?
I honestly don't know. And the weird thing is that our population is just booming at the moment, like about 30 years before. We just hit 25 million people 30 years before we were supposed to. So it's just crazy. Everything's so expensive here in terms of, I would say, like food and living costs is just crazy through the roof. People are so surprised. But I couldn't tell you why. I'm not an economist.
Oh, geez. Now, you are part American, right? So what's the backstory here?
Yeah, so my mom is from the United States, which makes me a dual citizen by birth. And my dad is obviously from Australia, so I have a cool little dual citizenship, which is turning out to be pretty useful in this climate. It's pretty good.
What do you mean? Because you can go back and forth to America and Trump? Did you vote for Trump?
I didn't vote. I don't feel like it's all right for me to vote living in Australia for an American election. I would have voted for Trumpy, though, if I was going to.
Well, that's thoughtful of you, because we have Mexicans that do that, Israelis that do that, illegals that do that, like everybody. And then here you are, this Trump supporter. I don't know. Maybe I don't feel good about that.
I don't live in the country, so I'm a little bit, I feel like if I was living there, I would have voted. And this is something that really confuses me about America, is you don't have to vote. Whereas in Australia, you get fined if you don't vote.
That's true. Is it really? I've never heard that. Yeah. So what kind of fine would you have to face?
I think it's a $75 or $80 fine, which, I mean, if you think about it, that's pretty like big sum of money just for going to the polling booth. So
I lived in Sweden, speaking of weird government fees, they have this mandatory TV tax. If you have a TV, you have to pay this tax, and it pays for the government propaganda channel. And there, if you don't pay, they literally come and knock on your door and like try and get money from you and stuff. It's outrageous.
Enough. That sounds really healthy. It sounds good for the economy as well.
Now, this is going to be fun because we have a lot of Australian listeners, actually, a lot of supporters down there. So it's nice to bring out a fresh face from Australia. Now, you call yourself a conservative now versus the American conservative scene. How is the Australian conservative scene different? Because we have our fair share of, I'm sure you've heard the term, cuckservatives here in America.
You know what? I think that I've been asked this before, and it's really hard to sort of articulate, but there's definitely a difference between Aussie conservatives and American conservatives. And I think that it more comes from the fact that Aussies don't have sort of an innate sense of freedom going on. So even when we are conservative and we're for things like smaller government or lower taxation and things like that, we still don't have that sort of innate sense of I need my freedom, which obviously has been ingrained in Americans because it's part of the Constitution. It's part of the Bill of Rights. So I think that's a massive difference. But also the starting point of conservatism in Australia is very different. Like our major party, for instance, that's on the right, they're called the Liberal Party, which is super confusing for people that aren't from Australia. So the origins are different, really.
Now, what is the state of liberalism in Australia? You follow American politics. It's just completely insane, you know, social justice warriors, censorship, like so much is happening in America. It's just outrageous and pretty quickly. Now, what about Australia? What can you tell us about the state of liberalism there?
I actually make the joke a lot of the time that I can't tell who's more psychotic, the Australian liberals or the American liberals. But, you know, I think that they're quite the same. I think that they actually, I think our liberals take cues from the American liberals and then sort of enact things that they see the American liberals doing. So, for instance, Antifa over here has really taken off. They protest basically everything. Then you have, I guess, like a lot of these other really, really hard regressive left groups as well that are sort of doing a lot of the same things or picking up on the same cues as what the Americans are doing. So, you know what? They're taking over a lot of the areas. So like academia, for instance, is absolutely overrun by liberals. And I'm pretty vocal about that because I've just graduated with my master's and I just hated school. I just thought it was the worst thing ever because mm-hmm. it's just one of those environments that's completely, it's just not inclusive.
Oh, yeah. So, all the Marxist professors and then these kids, yeah. they go to university and they think they've seen the light because they learned about yeah. Karl Marx. And this is so pathetic, you know, and then it's like, and they all do it. And they just come out like very self-righteous and high yes. and mighty. I mean, so I've yeah. met some of these, you know, they're 21 years old and they think they just know everything about everything.
So annoying. You're just like, sit down, young blood, be yeah. quiet. Yeah. Me saying that here at 25.
So. Now, what did you major in?
So I did my master's of journalism for that, the one I just graduated from. And then my undergrad was in criminology, interestingly enough, which actually I think was worse in terms of dealing with liberals and crazy, crazy social justice ideologies and things.
One thing I noticed when I spent time in Australia is people think, oh, Aussies, they're just crazy and wild and over the top. And, you know, they love to party and they tell good jokes. And you definitely have that element. But one thing I noticed is they tend to be very obedient to the government. That is one thing that kind of shocked me. They're not very rebellious politically. Am I correct?
Yeah, no, that's 100% it. I think Aussies, like I said, you know, when we're looking comparatively at America and Australia, Americans want their freedom. Aussies, I think, because if they've never had to fight to have their freedom or their independence, don't sort of value it in the same way. But basically what you're saying is my major frustration with this country, because I love Australia and I want it to be a successful nation. But all too often, the population just rolls over and says, okay, government, do whatever you want. So they often make changes, particularly in my state. The government here, I think, is just, they're just terrible. But they're bordering on actual being an actual socialist little republic down here. And it's terrible. I think people are also very unaware and they don't know what's happening. And they're also very, very apolitical. People don't know this. And I'm sure other Aussies that watch your channel will probably agree with this. Aussies are very apolitical. They don't care. So that's a huge problem, I think, in this country.
Now, do you guys get a lot of the same blame when it comes to colonialism? You stole the land and genocide of the natives. And what kind of crap do you guys hear down there?
Oh, yeah, no, it's exactly the same. I think anything that you could say in the States about the American Indians is exactly what we get down here in regards to the Aboriginal population. So the liberals here, it's really interesting because you have a part of the population of the Aboriginals here who they're, you know, they assimilate, they're really cool. They, you know, they sort of love what Western culture has brought to the country. And then you have quite a big part of the population that doesn't feel that way, which is, I mean, I think these are issues that you have with colonized land, you know, sort of finding a medium between the people who were here originally and the people who sort of came and built things and made the society what it is today. But, you know, part of the thing that really, really bugs me, and this is what our liberals do, is they take days that are special to Australians, for instance, like Australia Day, which is our equivalent of the 4th of July, and they've tried to move it to a different day because they say that it's representative of a genocide that happened against the Native Australians or the Indigenous Australians. And for us, it's just like, well, are we Australian? Are we all Australian? Or are we just different subsets? You know, it's frustrating.
Well, why didn't the Abbos just open their arms to diversity and multiculturalism and say, exactly. Welcome, European man, right?
I mean, this is xenophobic.
Jeez. Now, are they using this, you know, you came and stole the land from the Aboriginals as an excuse for immigration like we hear in America so many times?
I've never heard the argument, actually, that sort of an argument articulated, to be fair. I'm sure someone's probably said it, but yeah, it's definitely, our immigration is getting sort of out of control, which is, and it's frustrating for someone like me as well, because I mean, even though it's dropped, we're still taking in far too many people and it's just unsustainable. I think that, you know, our country has just hit 25 million people. Like I said before, it was 30 years before we thought it was going to happen, which is, I mean, that basically just goes to show how many immigrants we're taking in. But it's crazy because we have no infrastructure to support it. our government sort of deals with like infrastructure and things like that as like an afterthought. They just think, oh, actually, maybe we should fix that. And for a citizen like me in Melbourne, which is one of the biggest growing cities, it's terrible. It's just absolutely terrible.
Now, who are the people that are immigrating over there? Because when I spent time in Australia, I saw a huge Asian population. Yeah. And, you know, Thailand, Vietnam, who's coming over there mostly?
Well, so the three biggest groups of people that are coming to this country are, like you said, the Asians or the Chinese, predominantly the mainland Chinese, I would say, but obviously you do have other Asian groups coming here. Then we have Indians who are also coming here. I don't know if you'd lump them in with Asian. I don't know if they fall into that category. And then also people from the United Kingdom, which is interesting. I don't know what sort of the breakdown is with ethnicity when it comes to the United Kingdom, but definitely I do think that the actual Australian population is shrinking. So now I know that 30% of our population is born outside of this country. So, I mean, for me, it's just like, I feel like we're selling our souls to the immigrant base. And it makes me really sad because people say things like, oh, there's no such thing as an Australian culture, but you know, there is. And multiculturalism in Australia, you know, a lot of people have said it, but it doesn't really work that well. The Chinese are fine. They totally integrate. They're you know, really great people. But I just feel like we're not doing the right thing by our nation insofar as how many people we're bringing in and how much we don't put emphasis on sustaining actual Australia, the actual Australian culture.
Now, the thing is that the Chinese, they may be nice, but the point is there's like 1.5 billion of them and they're like buying up tons of land in Australia.
Yes.
You see that in Canada and that's just not cool. Imagine if it was the other way around, right? I mean,
exactly.
You can be nice, but you have a country. China is actually massive. I was just having this conversation with someone today, and I've been to China. There's a lot of land, and their economy is booming because, you know, the West has given them basically all their trade secrets of how to make everything. All the manufacturing is happening there.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, they're getting loaded, and then they're buying up tons of land everywhere. I think New Zealand just was made it illegal so that foreigners can't buy land, which is, I'm surprised it didn't do it before. But what about Australia? Foreigners can just come buy anything, right?
Yeah, basically. So I don't think, look, I'm not an expert on this topic, so
sure.
I don't want to sort of make any overwhelming statements about it where I might actually be wrong. But as far as I understand, I don't think we have any super serious legislation in place that stops people from buying up big chunks of land when they don't live here. I think there's been talk about introducing that sort of legislation to prevent foreigners from buying land here if they don't actually live here. But I mean, even in the last few years, massive, massive, huge chunks of land have been sold to overseas bodies. And then obviously we can't access them. And something that happens a lot in Melbourne is you'll have Chinese investors building massive, massive, like monolithic skyscrapers and apartment buildings. And then what they do is they won't let white people or, you know, Australians live in these buildings. They'll just advertise them to the Chinese. And again, I think these are areas where I just say, you know, if we want to have multiculturalism, that's fine. But you also have to be inclusive, and you can't just discriminate against people and only have buildings that are for particular individuals and what happens.
And that's what happens, you know. And it's funny though how this multiculturalism just only happens in Western countries, huh? Try and go push that anywhere else, and they would laugh at you. You know, I hear from non-Europeans around the world, fellow nationalists who support us, and they listen to our show, and they're like, "Yeah, Europeans are insane for allowing what they're allowing right now." You know. Just the all-out replacement of their people. Now, when it comes to nationalist parties or any parties with actual game in Australia, who is there right now?
This is, you know what, this is a toughie when it comes to our politics because it's all over the shop. But you have there's a party called One Nation, who I would say are probably the biggest nationalistic kind of party. They basically run on the idea that multiculturalism has failed, and that I guess that they're for really completely stemming the flow of immigration, really stopping immigration. So that's their sort of main running point. The lady who runs that, whose name is Pauline Hanson, she's very, very Aussie. She was a fish and chip shop owner at one stage. Other than that, I feel like they're probably it, you know. I mean, there's other very Australia-focused groups such as the Australian Conservatives, and there's a couple, there's the Hunting Fishing Party as well. But other than that, there's really only one sort of major nationalist group. But they've gained a lot of momentum over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think the parties that just come out and say repatriation, close the borders, they're actually starting to do well. I think Sweden's ahead of the curve there. Now, Sweden was ahead of the curve for taking people in and open borders policies. And so they're kind of quicker down that road. And now you have a true nationalist party that's literally talking about, you know, repatriation and stuff. And they're actually second most popular right now. So I think that it might catch up. It might catch up in other European nations, I hope, in the colonies, you know.
Mm. Yeah, well, you would definitely hope that in terms of Europe, because Europe is basically like us. They're doing it at a worse rate. They're selling their souls. I feel so bad for European countries. And, you know, when I was, because I lived in, well, I traveled around England and then spent some time living in London. And I just realized that London has absolutely really no sort of definitive culture anymore. It makes me really sad. And same with France. I mean, you'll probably know way more about this than I will, but, you know, looking at sort of France and the way that Italy was going and Germany, oh my goodness, it actually worries me. I look at these people and I think, if they're a blueprint for what we're going to do, I do not want to go down with this ship. It's just very depressing.
I mean, it should be worrisome. I mean, it makes me want to scream and it makes me want to cry and I get emotional when I see footage of what's happening and, you know, Paris and London and parts of Sweden, just all around Europe, and all of the crime basically that's coming, and the fighting and the possible wars that could be coming across Europe because of basically open gates policies. And the worst part of it is that it's a lot of our own people who are allowing this to happen. And it seems like we're powerless from being able to say anything. You get hate speech fines in Germany. They come after you. They raid your identitarians are being raided and their computers stolen. I mean, this is insanity. These are like a communism 2.0 or something with forced multiculturalism. Now,
yeah, it's nuts.
When it comes to free speech in Australia, I know you're probably keeping an eye. In America right now, they're just banning and censoring left and right, kicking us off of payment gateways and all kinds of platforms. I mean, it's just outrageous in free speech in America. And you learn people say, oh, they're private corporations. Well, it turns out that these private corporations have actually received lots of money from the government as well. So it's actually our taxpayers who are, you know, our tax money that's going to these companies, and then they're shutting us down from having any kind of political debate. It's insane. Is anything like that happening in Australia?
We obviously have laws that I think infringe freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is actually a really weird concept in Australia, just because we don't have an overt freedom of speech. We don't have a Bill of Rights. There's nothing in our constitution that protects our freedom of speech. The only reason we have freedom of speech, and just to qualify, it's freedom of political speech, meaning you can criticize the government and things, and it's not an offense. But it's implied in our constitution. We don't even have anything overtly saying, yes, you can speak your mind and say your thoughts. So, you know, in terms of these platforms, because obviously most of them are based in America, there are people who get kicked off of them that are from Australia. But obviously that's coming out of the way that the Americans operate, not so much the way that my country operates. But, you know, Australia has so many laws and things that I think really infringe upon people's ability to actually express themselves. I mean, we have the normal hate speech laws and things, but then there's a really controversial part of a law called the Racial Discrimination Act. And basically there's a part called 18C that says that it's unlawful to basically offend and humiliate someone. So, it's laughable. And, you know, and a lot of people got really, really upset about that because they thought, you know, why are we using words like offend to refer to, you know, who is to say that someone's not going to get offended by something that's very simplistic or that's not even meant to cause offense? So I'm really concerned about our laws here. I think that we need a Bill of Rights, or at least an overt part of our constitution that says that we have freedom of speech, because it's just so easy. If we had a dictator in this country, they would have a field day, because all of our legislation basically sets them up to be able to do whatever they want.
Jeez, it's just outrageous to me, you know.
It's so grim.
Now, what do people think about Trump down there?
I think you've got Trump lovers like me, people that really like him and think he's doing great things. And then obviously because of the way that the media presents him and the way that the media sort of talks about him, there's a lot of people who think he's a bit of an idiot. But then you start to dig a little deeper and you say, hey, why do you think that? And they really have approximately zero arguments. So I just think it's probably the same thing in America, where you get a lot of the really angry mainstream media people saying, oh, Trump's an idiot, Trump tweets too much, but they really have no basis for why they don't like him or why they don't like his policies.
Yeah, I saw, what was it, a tweet today. Journalists is just like every day something about Trump. He took a picture with some biker and it turned out he had a tattoo, basically was saying that he loved guns and titties or something. Like, like everyone is talking about this. I'm like, how is this world news? And then how are these guys like complaining? I'm like, come on, you're telling me guys don't like those things? Like,
it's ridiculous. Yeah, well, exactly. It's so funny. Like you said, he could basically do anything and it would make the news. He could be holding kittens and just like cuddling a kitten and they'd be like, look at Trump. He hates dogs. He hates them so much. And that's why he preferences kittens. It's like, what?
I know. It's absurd. Now, speaking of guns, Australia changed laws. I don't think you can legally own a handgun unless you're a professional shooter? I don't know what that means. Fill us in on the gun laws, because I know crime rates went up once they started taking people's guns.
Yeah, so basically, just for background, in 1996, there was a mass shooting in Port Arthur, which is in Tasmania, and I think 36 people died. It was quite a number of people. And basically from that, what happened was there was a knee-jerk reaction and our gun legislation was changed. So that if you want to, well, just talking about handguns, if you want to have a handgun, you do have to register with a shooting association. You do have to be part of a club and you have to keep your handgun at the club. You can't bring it home with you. With long arms and things like that, you can bring them home and have them in your home. But the thing is that you have to separate your ammunition from your firearm, meaning they have to be in completely separate locked cases. 100% of the time. So,
and is someone going to come check? Do they have checkups? Like random?
You know what? They probably would, just considering that our illegal search. We don't really have a thing to protect us from illegal search and seizure here. So that's something that really concerns me. I mean, the police can actually search your home or your car or your possessions if they think that you are. That you have a weapon that you're going to use as a weapon. Our gun laws are ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. I don't think that we could go as far as the American gun laws and sort of just have it be a free-for-all, because Australians have a very different mentality towards firearms. But yeah, I mean, as someone who's grown up around guns and sort of, you know, has fired them many, many a time, I don't really understand why our legislation has got to this point, considering that it hasn't really indicated a drop in crime rates. And you still have people that are accessing firearms illegally anyway.
Yeah, I heard that crime rates were going up, obviously. I mean, we see that whenever the government comes and takes people's guns and people can't protect themselves and take care of actual criminals, the crime rates get worse, right?
Well, I mean, they were actually, this is interesting. A lot of people don't know this. They were already on a decline anyway. Crime rates, or at least firearm crime rates in Australia, were already on a decline by the time that those laws came into effect in 1996. Then you had a weird little spike in homicide rates and I guess in sort of handgun crime shortly or just directly after, like immediately after those 1996 laws came into effect. And then again, you had a sort of decline in crime rates. Now they're skyrocketing again. The other thing that I always sort of bring to light about the firearm violence that was happening prior to the 1996 law changes is that we had only below 15 mass shooting. So obviously mass shooting is when four or more people are shot, not killed, but just shot in the span of, you know, from 1960 to 1996. So that's a really long span to only have, you know, less than 15 mass shootings. And then now it's really interesting. Since 2002, we've had actually 8. So, I mean, you really got to question sort of in that time frame to have so little and now to have actually more comparatively. What is that saying about our population? What's that saying about if the gun laws are successful? And the other thing too, and I need people to stop doing this, is comparing America and Australian gun laws because they're so different. And Australia is so different. Australia doesn't have a gun culture. Australia has never had to fight a war for its independence. It's just always been a very colonized, settler-based society, which means that our gun laws and our self-defense laws are representative of that.
You didn't have like cowboys and Indians fighting and you didn't have civil wars, and that's true. And you also didn't have ghettos like Chicago, for instance. It's
no.
Kind of smaller population.
Yeah. Well, exactly. We have, I mean, like I said, we've got 25 million now, but America's got what, 330 million?
Yeah. It's and they're taking in a million a year legally. That's why illegal immigration isn't the only problem here. You know, legally a year. I mean, that's a big city we're importing every year.
Yeah. Well, 25 million is our population is less than the size of California, which has 39 million. I mean, that's just boggles my mind. We are just such a big nation, but just with such a small population. So when people are like, oh, guns, I'm like, no, it's not the same.
And that's
not even remotely the
same.
No,
it's not. I would say, though, I've traveled a lot, and of all the countries now, there's big differences between Australia and America. But I would say Australia is probably the closest thing to America of all the colonies and European countries and stuff, even more, you know, more so than Canada. Canada's so different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, Canada, I feel like Canada and Australia are quite similar, but Canada's a little bit too polite. Aussies are at least a little bit more
fiery.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. they joke a lot that, like, larrikinism is very alive and well in some parts of this country, not where I'm from, regrettably, but, you know, in other parts, definitely. But yeah, no, I think Australia's adopted a lot of the American culture, to be fair, and I think that that's why you'll see similarities. But we, like I said before, you know, we're sort of selling our souls and giving away our own culture. So I don't really know where we're at anymore.
No. Well, let's shift gears to Aussie men here. You are organizing a men's right march. So tell us about that.
So basically, it came off the back of a lot of media coverage of an event that happened here where a woman was horrifically murdered and raped, and it just absolutely horrible what happened to her. And basically, the media coverage following that and then in the weeks to come basically had a lot of politicians, talking heads, and basically lots and lots of different publications calling men collectively rapists, murderers, violent, etc. And it was interesting because there was a political response to it. Where you had people trying to pass legislation in parliament to give us the right to self-defense, because in Australia we can't carry pepper spray or we can't carry non-lethal weapons. So that basically went into parliament to be passed and got knocked back. And then you had women basically in parliament, actual parliamentarians, calling men rapists. And so a lot of people were very upset about that, men and women. So I basically looked at the way that we were talking about it and I thought, this is unacceptable. And then because through my Facebook page, a lot of people reached out and said, hey, I'm feeling really upset about this. And this was men and women reaching out. And they said, it's just not acceptable. It's appalling. I feel very alone, very unhappy. I don't like the way this is going down. And I thought, well, let's have a march for men's issues and for solidarity.
Now, do you have a lot of feminists in the Australian government?
Yeah, you know what? It seems like there are. There's a couple really particular senators and things that I just think, how did you get in? But yeah, we definitely put a lot of emphasis on women in Australia, particularly when it comes to parliament. We have a minister for women, but no minister for men, and they love to talk about equality.
Oh, of course, I know. It's just so pathetic. And as a woman, I'm like, I don't need that. I don't need this garbage. Like, don't voice this on us, you know?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Speaking of rape, you know, there's a rape epidemic in Sweden, you know, after open border policy. But it's funny, though, how feminists there, they turn a blind eye when it's a certain kind of guy or a foreigner, really, that does the raping, which is really just, it's shocking and just awful, honestly. Like, what has happened to some of these women and how feminists turn their back on them because, let's face it, it wasn't a Swedish guy doing the raping, right? So do you have any of that going on in Australia yet, or is it not that much of a difference?
Well, I would say that it's probably quite the same thing. I mean, I can't say definitively, but, you know, you'll have situations where a foreigner, or just in particular, someone who's from, follows Islam. Sorry, I can't speak English. You'll have someone who follows Islam who'll rape a woman, and often it'll get thrown out because of cultural differences from court. So I can testify to this because the same thing happened to me. And when I went to press charges and when I went to deal with it, basically what came back was the police said, this is not going to go anywhere because you have cultural differences. And basically they justified the behavior. But you never hear about it from the feminists.
What happened to you? I'm sorry, I missed that.
So I was sexually assaulted by a Muslim man. Oof. And when I went to press charges, they threw it out and they said, no, we're not going to do it. And they literally said to me, like, the actual words that they used were, there's cultural differences. And I thought, well,
I hear that a lot.
You're living in my country. I mean, you would think that you would know the difference between, like, sexually assaulting someone is not okay and you know, being nice to someone is perfectly fine. But yeah, like you said, you know, I think the feminists sort of overlook these things and they're just more focused on really non-issues like manspreading or mansplaining than actual tangible problems in society that are caused by particular groups.
Yeah, I've seen some of the websites they've tried to push in Sweden for these Muslims that come in, and things they're trying to teach them about women and sex. And it's like, they literally have like pictures, don't beat women, okay? And it's not okay to like marry a 12-year-old and you can't rape, okay? And it's just like, who are these people? If you have to tell them like rape is bad, or, you know, and beating up a woman is bad. It's just, it's amazing. That's not a culture I want anything to do with, nor should we be importing it, you know?
Well, that's it. Yeah, that's 100% how a lot of us down here feel, because our Muslim population is obviously growing. And Islam is a corrosive, let's be real, Islam is a really, really corrosive ideology. It doesn't respect women. Women are basically second-class citizens in Islam. And that's why I find it so ridiculous and ironic that feminists would rather fight me about a march for solidarity and a march for men than actually think about and deal with tangible issues like the women that are walking around burqa clad, that, you know, have absolutely no rights, that are submissive to their husband, probably being beaten at home, having all these children. And really, you want to go after me? It makes my blood boil, to be fair.
Yeah. And then I just feel like, you know what? It's not our problem. They just all need to just go to a Muslim country, because they've just brought more problems. We already have enough of our own problems to deal with, and our own infighting amongst, you know, white people, that we don't need to bring, import in more people to have more tensions and stuff. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when is this march, by the way?
So it's on the 25th of August, which is in 9 days, and it'll be in Melbourne. We did want to do a couple national ones because people reached out to do national ones, but I think a lot of people got quite disheartened by the way that there's been a bit of a witch hunt towards the march and towards me. So it's a bit disappointing, but we're hoping that the Melbourne march will be quite big.
So what do you expect as far as how many people are going to come out?
It's really, really hard to say. On the actual event on Facebook, there's over 600 saying that they're attending. How many actually come is sort of unclear. Then there's, I think, nearly 3,000 saying that they're interested, which, again, I don't know what any of this translates to. So it's definitely just going to be sort of touch and go. What's funny to me is that there's a counter rally. They're saying that this is sexism and that I'm a misogynist.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You just got to laugh at that, you know.
Yeah, it's just, I just think about it. I'm like, what is this? But the counter rally looks like it's going to be quite sizable. And so I think that puts a lot of people off as well. But, you know, they shouldn't be, because tangible action actually is what brings about outcomes. So
yeah,
I just need Aussies to know that.
Yeah, I know. In America, as far as suicide rates go, white guys top the list. And it's quite a bit of an epidemic. Actually, there was a pilot, or a guy who took over a plane. His name was Rich, and he killed himself. I don't know if you've seen any of the memes on Twitter about this guy. I think it was in the Seattle area, and he was talking to the traffic control center, and he's like, hey, you think if I can land this or do this trick that I can get a job, you know, from the airline? And then he's like, nah, I'm a white guy, you know? And it was just kind of surreal to hear this conversation before he kills himself, you know? Yeah. I mean,
when was that?
This was just, I think it was just a few days ago, last week. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's awful.
Yeah, it's absolutely sad. And people always say, oh, you know, men, especially white guys, they're so privileged. They're not discriminated against. They have everything. I'm like, oh yeah, come out and try and be loud and proud that I'm a straight white male, and see what happens, you know? I mean,
That's exactly it. Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, we have these marches for homosexuality. You have marches for, you know, gay couples. You can be a woman. You can be a proud woman. You can be a proud whatever, but you can't be a proud straight white male. And it's really sad.
Yeah, and I get defensive. I think anyone who has sons gets defensive too, because you worry about their future, and then as they become a minority, and there's all this hostility being, you know, riled up amongst the masses, and they're, you know, pointing to this demographic as being, you know, the biggest devils that have ever walked the face of the earth. You know, I worry about that long term. But I think that, you know, white guys, I think they have their limits too. They're so tolerant. They're so tolerant to a fault, I think. But I'm hoping that eventually they'll just be like, okay, enough is enough. And I think we're seeing that amongst a lot of the millennials. I mean, we have a lot of millennials that watch this show, a lot of people that are rebelling against liberalism and everything that comes with it.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think that, you know, you sort of hit the nail on the head, is what does this look like in the future? And I think that statistically speaking, men are turning away from women. And I think that's really sad. And the reason it's happening is because every time they turn around, there's a new rule of something that you can't do in a way that you have to interact with women, and all these parameters and rules and things. So, you know, especially when it comes to things like the Me Too movement, it's just heightened gender gaps. It's just all these sort of things are very, very divisive. And it's sad. We should be able to call attention to issues that both genders are experiencing without putting either side down, you know. So, and just to confirm, in Australia, the suicide rates of men are 3 times higher than that of women. So you have about over 40 Australian men and boys killing themselves every single week in this country. So that's about 6 a day. And I just look at that and I think, you know, what does that look like long term when you associate masculinity and being a man with something that's toxic and negative? And I just think we're ruining the next generation of boys in order to pursue this intangible sense of equality when we've already basically achieved equality.
That's why good parenting is very important. You have to teach your sons and teach your daughters something different. You know, I mean, this is insanity what's happening. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about men, but what about women in Australia? Or how is feminism? How is, you know, the idea of marriage and kids? What's popular down there right now?
What's popular? Oh, I mean, I think that there's a pretty big emphasis on feminism, but I don't think a lot of women actually are feminists, which is so interesting. But it's basically weaseled its way into our judicial system, into the government, into basically any facet of life you will find feminism, which is so interesting. But, you know, in terms of marriage and things, I couldn't really say. I don't really sort of know what other people are doing. I know that dating is really, really difficult. There's all these, again, all these parameters and rules and things that I think people are getting sick of. But Aussies, I think, as a general rule, are having less babies. I think that they're getting married later in life. And I think that people are more concerned about pursuing careers and things like that rather than actually starting a family. But I guess that's the world over, isn't it?
I'm seeing something different amongst millennials here. Eastern Europe's always been different. They always tend to have kids, you know, younger and get married and want families. Yeah. But I'm seeing a trend of millennials and a lot of young girls who are, you know, 25 and under, who actually, or I'd say even 30 and under, who want families. They want a husband. They care more about that than going to school and the careers and stuff. So, I mean, I think that's good. You know, I mean, I started later in life, but I didn't meet my husband until I was 30. So sometimes you don't always meet the right guy, you know?
Gotta wait it out.
Yeah, you can't always force it because you also don't want to start a marriage. You don't want the divorces, you know? So, you know, there's a little bit of serendipity involved there too, but it's a matter of too trying to plan out your life a little bit. I think that you can kind of juggle things around as a woman. There's things that you can do, and you can also plan to have a family in that mix, you know?
Yeah, well, look, in terms of the way that Aussies operate with marriage and things, I couldn't say. I can say what I've sort of viewed in terms of my friendship group and the people around me. But, you know, I think that, I just don't think Aussies operate in the same way as Americans when it comes to family and things. So I would say that there's definite, and you know, it's a cultural thing. There's definite cultural differences between America and Australia. And I think something that is really important to know is that while Australia has sort of a Judeo-Christian background, a lot of people are atheist or a lot of people are agnostic and don't sort of practice. Whereas in America, I feel like there's such a strong emphasis on Christianity or the subsets of Christianity. Yeah. And I think that influences marriage, and I think that influences babies and all that sort of stuff. Whereas I don't think that's so much the thing in Australia.
Yeah. I think there's a good pagan culture too, and a lot of pagans like to, you know, kids. Kids is important in families too, as well. In Australia, people aren't as religious. I think it's kind of like Sweden too, where people don't, they're more life partners, but marriage, like marriage by a piece of paper, isn't as important. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, again, I can't say definitively, but it definitely seems that way. I think that there's less emphasis on getting married now, and definitely more emphasis on having a partner, pursuing a career, having kids later in life. I mean, I know my folks were in a 15-year relationship even before they bothered tying the knot, and they had 2 kids out of it. So, I would say that's probably the case.
Yeah, to me, the piece of paper isn't as important as the bond, obviously. Marriage is much, it's not just the state and a piece of paper, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of, you know, European folks, we're more into high investment parenting. And so a lot of, you know, white folks like to have the resources. They want to have the nest in order before they have the children. And I think there's some people that say, we just have to pump out kids and have lots of kids. And I think, yeah, there's truth that we should be having kids. But I also think quality over quantity, you know, because we are a world minority. And look how we've been able to kick ass in so many ways already. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should be looking after. Well, this is the thing, though, is people don't plan it out. They basically just think, oh, I'll have kids. And I don't know if it's the same in the United States or in parts of Europe, but definitely Australia kind of rewards you for having offspring, which to me is not exactly the best way of going about things, simply because, you know, you want to have a house, you want to have a comfortable, stable relationship, you want to have a career or a job, you want to be having a stable income before you bring children into the world, so that way you don't have to leech off of the government. You know, encouraging people with baby bonuses and rewarding them with money to have babies, I just think is so wrong.
I think that's great if it's like Poland or Hungary or more a nationalistic country where they want to encourage a baby boom. I think that's awesome, but not when you have, you know, tons of Muslims in your country who are just like having 8 kids and then they abuse the system. That system should be for the founders, really, you know?
Yeah. You know what's interesting, and what I should have mentioned before, is that patriotism in Australia is a really, really weird concept. So when we talk about it, you know, when you say like what sort of nationalistic or national orientated, what are they called, parties do we have? Basically, this is something that a lot of people don't know about Australia, is that if you come out and you're basically someone who says that you're patriotic or that you love the country, you often get labeled as someone who is, I guess, more down market, or what we call a bogan, which is basically a redneck. And it's almost like an ugly term here. I think a lot of people love Australia, but we're actually really not allowed to talk about it because we get labeled all these horrible things and we are made fun of if we are, you know, if we love this country. And I think that's something that is probably why we're selling ourselves off to the highest bidder, because we actually have no pride in being Australian. There's lots of people that love this country and that who have very quiet pride and who, you know, would say it in private conversations, but they wouldn't go out into the streets and say, I love this country. It's really sad.
Now, what do you think created that? And I've heard different theories from all kinds of people, education, media, programming, but where do you think the inception point is? Because it seems to be a pattern amongst the entire white world.
Yeah, look, I couldn't say definitively. I definitely know that it's come out from the way that I think the media treats people that are very patriotic. Even so, there are groups here of people that label themselves as patriots, and they often get called Nazis or white supremacists, which, you know, I don't know how much truth there is in that, but it just goes to show that the people that come out and sort of create patriotic groups often get labeled like that. And it's definitely in part due to the media. I don't know what else might be causing that sort of distinction between, you know, actually loving your country and then becoming a Nazi. Like, at what point do you become a Nazi because you love your country? But it's definitely peddled by the media.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, so many times I've heard the reason against having, you know, white majorities is because the Holocaust. I mean, isn't this like the weakest argument ever? It's just like, yeah, it's going to automatically, everyone's going to want to build gas chambers, you know, it's just like,
yeah, exactly.
It's absurd already. And they've been absurd. Guilting that over our head over and over, you know, the entire world, actually, the white world, have been guilting us over the Holocaust, you know.
Oh, I don't even, you know what, like, we live at the bottom of the planet. You know, we have had absolutely nothing to do with what's happened in Europe besides getting involved because America asked us to. But I just look at these things and I just think, really, really? You want to talk to us, a bunch of random settlers? That's mostly, and Australia is such a melting pot as well. You have people from all different parts of the world, and everybody will be a half something, or their parents are from somewhere. And I just think, how are we getting this association? Where is this coming from? It's just absurd.
Now, what about and I remember Australians, they always hated this when you brought it up, that people say, well, the English actually shipped all their prisoners down to Australia, so they're criminal blood.
Yeah, no, I actually read this on Facebook recently where someone was like, Australians get really angry when you tell them that they're convicts. And I mean, not really. I mean, most people actually laugh about it. They find it really funny that they have ancestry that, you know, where they had at some stage some ancestor who stole a loaf of bread and then got shipped over here. But
yeah, exactly.
A lot of
it's
Aussies,
a minor crime. Yeah.
Exactly. Just like took some, you know, some bread and that was it. Medicine, whatever. But heaps of Aussies actually came here willingly. So just going to dispel that myth for you.
And
lots
that,
of us are convicts.
Yeah. And that was hard work, you know, just making that journey by boat was very difficult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Jeez. Last question for you. I want to ask about the Afrikaners. Is Australia taking in South African refugees? I know you had a politician who was saying, yes, we need to do it urgently.
Yeah. His name's Peter Dutton. He's the immigration minister. The last I heard about it, he was pushing to have special visas given to or granted to the white South Africans, or I guess the South Africans that are being murdered in droves, so the farmers predominantly. As far as how far that went, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't really heard about it or read anything about it in the last little while, but that's basically the way that the Australian government operates. You know, they're like, oh, let's talk about this particular issue and then never, ever bring it up again. They would much rather bring in, you know, 19,000 or 16,000 Syrian refugees that probably won't contribute anything to the economy or actually do anything useful. I'm hopeful, though. I genuinely am hopeful, because Peter Dutton, I would say, is probably one of the only politicians in this country that actually wants to do the right thing by this country, which is probably a bit of a thing that would upset a couple people that even are on the right, because I know a lot of people don't like him. But I think he's a good guy. I think he does some really good stuff. But I'm hopeful. But it just keeps getting knocked back. So,
oh man, I saw even Russia's taking in South African refugees. I watched some footage of them welcoming them in, and they're giving them plots of land to farm and help with the agriculture. So, you know, things will take off. Australia should do the same thing. They're hardworking, industrious people, those Afrikaners, you know.
You know, the problem, though, is that people keep saying things like, oh, if we bring South African farmers here, then what's going to happen to our existing farmers? Because our farmers are committing suicide at really, really high rates. Jeez. Because we're also experiencing mass drought at the moment in Queensland. So you have a lot of farmers who are basically just offing themselves. Excuse the term. That's not a nice term, but are killing themselves because they just can't sustain it. So people, there's a lot of Aussies that are like, don't bring them here because, you know, they're going to farm and we already have too many farmers. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're probably not going to come here and farm. Let's be real.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to come there to survive, you know?
Yeah. Well, not have their houses burned down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Sydney, thank you for your time today. It's been a blast getting to know you, and we'll definitely have to stay in touch and do this again and keep us in touch, you know, keep us informed of what's happening down under.
Yeah, no, definitely. Just, if you want to hear about the doom and gloom in Australia, I'm your woman. But no, it's been awesome. Thank you for having me.
I can't say it enough, but thank you to all Red Ice members and donators. You make what we do possible. Every day, I am grateful and encouraged by your support. And I have to keep repeating this, but alternative, honest media is under attack. If we're ever removed, censored, or banned from the big platforms or social media, always head to redicemembers.com, where we host all our own content independently. Also subscribe to the Red Ice Livestream YouTube channel and join our Telegram group. If you want to become a member or donate, we have a variety of ways and counting that you can do so. With your membership, we can hire more people, make more content, and of course, offer most of what we do for free without any ads or sponsors. All the important links are in the description text of this video. You guys and gals are the best. You are why we do what we do. Much more coming up. See you on the next one.